The CU 2.0 Podcast.
Welcome to the CU 2.0 Podcast with your host, Robert McGarvey. That's me, of course. Today's guest, Ron Shevlin with Cornerstone Advisors. We're going to talk about his report, What is Going On in Banking 2019? Is the Party Over? Shevlin asks, has the Trump bump become the Trump slump? And he says, in a survey of some 305 senior financial institution executives, about 40% of which are executives in credit unions, that there are signs of rising pessimism, which isn't to say that they're a pessimistic group on the whole. They're optimistic. And as I discuss with Shevlin, seems to me that the optimism might be a bit delusional. Once you look at the reality of the data that they're confronting, at one point I asked Shevlin if it's fair to say that many of these executives are on marijuana highs, doing marijuana-related business banking, because their responses just are so totally out of whack with reality. An extraordinary number, 63% of credit union executives think that their digital banking is future-ready. If 13% are future ready, that would be a lot in my opinion. But you'll hear Shevlin's opinion. This is a lively, action-packed podcast. Fairly short, moves quick, covers a lot of points. And remember, it's all based on data acquired and developed by Shevlin and Cornerstone. The report is available free from Cornerstone. What's Going On in Banking 2019? Is the Party Over? Probably want to get a copy. Go through it. You may decide I'm high on marijuana. I don't know. I assure you I'm not, but could be other reasons.
So your report, the way I read it, has some elements of pessimism strewn in it, and we'll get to that. Or maybe I'm just a pessimistic guy. I don't know. You say, for instance, that the Trump bump is becoming the Trump slump.
Yeah, I wrote that. I'm not sure I think that's, I was trying to reflect what I was hearing and reading into the comments from the survey itself. I think, you know, compared to the past couple of years where credit union CEO optimism was about the upcoming year was pretty high, this year it definitely the trailed off a bit. There's no question about that. The percentage of the executives who said that they were somewhat or very optimistic about 2019 took a big hit from last year's numbers. And I think a lot of those comments were reflective of a, you know, forecast of a downturn in the economy. So, you know, coming out of the 2016 elections, when we did the surveys in both 2016 and 2017, and then even into 2018, there was a lot of optimism in the industry, both banks and credit union executives, expecting regulatory relief, expecting a bump in the economy. And, you know, to a large extent, a lot of that has lived up. It's been a couple good years for credit unions, no question about it. But in, you know, surveying a lot of these executives, and this year I asked specifically for comments. In the past, you know, it was just a survey and we just asked for their ratings. But this year, well, we solicited comments, and it's in the report as well. And while there were certainly, you know, plenty who are optimistic, there was certainly no shortage of those who were, you know, kind of reading the tea leaves and thinking that this was going to be a bit of a down year.
Well, the way I see the report data is, let's put the politics aside. There are some technical reasons in the report not to be all that optimistic. For instance, you warn about deposit displacement, where deposits are moving to alternatives that were essentially unimaginable 10 years ago. You also talk about checking accounts becoming, what did you call them, deposit motels or something. It's a cute term.
Paycheck motels,
where the money just dips in there, an automatic deposit, and then sucks out almost immediately. This is not cheerful news for a person running a traditional spread business that necessitates having a lot of deposits so you can make loans.
Yeah, you know, Robert, I don't want to come off as sounding too negative, but I do think that, you know, wanted to put up the warning signs from a longer term perspective, you know, for credit unions. They've seen a couple of good years. There's no question about that. And I think many of them are actually very well positioned in a lot of their markets. But, you know, I think if you look at what I'm kind of focusing on there was the long, not just the short term economic news, but the longer term shifts in consumer behavior. And I think at the core of it is, you know, around this deposit displacement and paycheck motel concept is the idea that the checking account is no longer or is rapidly no longer going to be the center of the consumer's financial universe. You know, the first thing that we used to do when we got out of college is, you know, get rid of that student checking account that was killing us with fees and overdraft charges and go get another account. And you know, that became our core account for a long time. You know, when my older daughter got out of school a few years ago, the first question she asked me was, do I even need a checking account, Dad? And, you know, that was 6-7 years ago, and the answer was still yes. But if she asked me that today, I'm not sure my answer would be yes. I think you can kind of get away with it. And so the longer term strategic issues, if you're a credit union, thinking about how to grow both your member base, but then more importantly, the relationships within the members, does not start from the checking account relationship anymore. And I think the challenge for a lot of credit unions is that they've seen a lot of their membership come in through auto loans and had a hard enough time selling in other products. And now, you know, the bad news is, so you were successful in selling in that checking account. Guess what? Longer the jumping off point for a deeper relationship. The challenge, you know, if you push me and say, so Ron, what's the answer? What product is it? And therein lies the problem, is that I'm not sure there is a product or an account that is that capability anymore. For many consumers, you know, they're looking for ease of payments and, you know, quality of payments being rewards on their debit and credit spending. So clearly the debit card is tied to the checking account. And so you think, well, that's the thing. But you know, look at what's happening today. Many consumers and a growing percentage of consumers have multiple checking accounts. I have another report coming out in another week looking at fintech adoption and, you know, looking at the neobanks like MoneyLion and Chime and Movin' and so forth. And, you know, a lot of consumers are opening up checking accounts with those providers, not because it's their core place where they're putting making their direct deposits, but because either they want the personal financial management tools that those firms offer, or they like the benefits, the rewards they're getting on their debit card spending. So, you know, then you look at the growth of the robo-advisor tools that many millennials and even now Gen Xers are putting their money in. So it's getting tougher, I think, for the average credit union to really have a strong strategy for understanding, you know, what's the path to membership relationship growth. And I think the tough part is it's more and more moving towards capabilities and less about a product or an account.
Well, I'm an old baby boomer, and I see more of my peers moving money out of traditional checking accounts and into things very much like checking accounts at, say, Schwab. And they rave about what great deals they're getting from, you know, Schwab in particular.
Yeah, Bob, I'll tell you that you're probably in the minority on that one, though. One of the surprising things that I found in the research that I've got coming out next week is that the youngest millennials, those in their 20s, are actually not the most ardent adopters of fintech. It's the older millennials in their 30s, and then to a lesser extent, but more so than the younger millennials, the Gen Xers. And I think that's a big surprise. But I have to tell you that in the research I just conducted, baby boomers were really nowhere on the map with fintech adoption. But I would have missed things like the Schwab adoption, because I would not have considered them sort of a fintech provider. But that's, you know, the surprising thing is that this is not all about, you know, 21-year-olds. It's really more about the 31 and 41-year-olds.
I'm surprised boomers didn't show up, because the people I know, how do you send money to your kid or your grandkid? PayPal or Venmo. The kid doesn't know what to do with a check. You send a kid 10 bucks in a check, the check's not going to be deposited. I mean, seriously. Whereas you send it in Venmo and it just...
No, I did find decent adoption. I was going to say that I did find on the P2P adoption that much greater levels of penetration and adoption among baby boomers than with the other types of tools. But even still there, the electronic P2P or the digital P2P adoption among boomers, they tend to find one tool that they like, whether it's Venmo or more likely a PayPal or, you know, increasingly it's Zelle, you know, because it's tied to their bank accounts. Whereas younger consumers are making a lot more use of multiple types of P2P accounts. They're using Zelle and Venmo and Square and maybe Apple Pay. And so they're kind of using whatever works for them at the time. The baby boomers tend to find just one tool that they use and they stick to that.
Now, in your data, did I read this right, that the credit unions you surveyed are 500 million or larger in assets?
I don't recall the distribution, but generally speaking, the credit unions were in all the FIs we surveyed were in the sort of $250 to $20 billion level. I don't recall what the credit union specific breakout was.
No, that's fine. Basically, though, what you're missing there is essentially the majority of credit unions that are smaller than that benchmark, even if the benchmark's 250 million. And that's fine. But it puts some of the data into sharper focus. I mean, I was stunned when I read that 63% of credit union executives think their digital banking is future ready. And these guys must be on drugs. I mean, maybe they have a marijuana business. I don't know. This doesn't make any sense to me. 63% think they're future ready.
I'm actually with you on this one, Bob. And the whole area of future ready just kind of surprises me. And some interesting trends. This was the third year that we've asked about future readiness. And in the first year, that was going into 2017, I was just kind of flabbergasted by the relatively high percentage of respondents who thought not just digital banking, but IT and marketing and all that was future ready. So I was a little bit surprised. And then going into 2018, I saw big declines in the percentages. So I said, okay, good. They're getting some reality. They're beginning to realize that they're not nearly as future ready as they thought they were. And then going into this year's survey, it looked like the numbers rebounded. I had an interesting encounter with a credit union management team early last year, doing a sort of a strategic planning session with them. And I asked them the same questions I asked in this survey about their perceptions of future readiness across a lot of these functions and areas. And they were very much in line with this, you know, 60-something percentage who said that they were future ready in digital banking. And I kind of challenged them on this. And I said, you know, really, why is it that you guys think that you're, you know, so future ready when it comes to digital banking, when there's so many innovations coming out that you don't know are going to stick, you know, don't know what the impact's going to be, have not responded to? And their answer was very interesting, Bob. They said, well, we're up to date with our vendors' digital banking, you know, tools and implementation. So we assume if we're keeping up to date with our vendor, then we must be future ready. And I have to assume that that's probably a view that many other credit union execs hold. So I had not thought of that, but that was their explanation why, and that could be an explanation why so many see themselves as future ready, because, you know, they're pretty much keeping up with what their vendor's offering, and so they assume they must be future ready. As I said, I'm kind of surprised at the high numbers myself, but I think what I heard from the credit union that I was talking with is the view was more about, you know, being at the latest on the latest version of their vendor's offerings, and so as long as they're, you know, if vendor's on 5.0 and they're on 5.0, we're keeping up. We're doing good. We must be future ready.
Yeah, I also saw in your data that there was, to me, surprisingly little interest in mobile bill pay or mobile wallets. Do you have a feeling for why that's so?
Probably a couple of factors influencing that, in particular the mobile wallet. Number one, I still don't think that's a particularly well-defined product concept or idea, and so it's still a little murky. Second, they're probably not feeling a lot of heat or demand from their customer member base for this. And I think when you look at back to the reality, as you just mentioned, that such an overwhelmingly high percentage of them rely on vendors, the vendors don't have tools that come. When I think about where is their mobile wallet adoption going on, I tend to think more about the merchant world than the financial institution world. I think of the Starbucks and the Walmarts and the CVSs with their mobile apps that are somewhat like mobile wallets. So I think that that explains the low number on that one. Why the low number on mobile bill pay? That's a little bit scary because up until recently, online mobile bill pay was really becoming a vast wasteland for both banks and credit unions, as direct billing behavior was increasing and consumers were just paying their bills directly with their billers. But interestingly, since the growth of mobile banking, mobile bill pay on the bank or credit union's mobile app has actually started to come back a bit. So the low interest on that is kind of surprising given the shift in consumer behavior.
I find it puzzling. I don't think they're surveying their consumers very well. I'm sure they think they are, but are they really? I don't know. It's anything else in that data that surprised you particularly?
Surprise and kind of a little bit of a warning alert was the interest in the fintech partnerships. Reflecting the fact that my data is most definitely skewed towards the larger credit unions. They still found, I think it was something around about 6 out of 10 who said that fintech partnerships would be important to them in 2019. And I don't know if that's necessarily surprising, but it is to me a little bit alarming because I'll tell you, Bob, as I talk with a lot of credit unions, when I hear that, we're looking at fintech partnerships, one of the things I love to ask them is, really, how many full-time people do you have dedicated towards these partnerships? We typically don't have anybody, but we're going to put, Bob and Sally on it. Oh, excellent. And what kind of experience does Bob and Sally have in negotiating fintech partnerships, vetting potential partners, structuring deals, and managing partnerships? Well, they don't have any, but I'm sure they can learn because they're really smart. And Bob, I'm sure they are really smart. But, you look at a BBVA, you look at a Santander, they've got, a couple hundred people doing fintech partnerships. And, to think that you're going to go out there and evaluate, vet, negotiate, and implement any number of partnerships with, number one, a small number of people, and number two, a small number of people who have absolutely no experience in this, I think they're really getting, not taking a particularly realistic view of this. Sure, you might end up with one partnership, and maybe it has a nice, somewhat of a nice impact. But reality is you really got to look at this from the opportunity cost perspective, which is if we had put our resources somewhere else, what kind of impact would we have had? And while it's really tough to say, if you had put that money and effort into your existing business, it might have had more impact than if you had focused on this new interesting area that's emerging. That's kind of tough, especially when you think, you don't never want to shortchange yourself for the future. But I think the reality is that many credit unions are simply deluding themselves into thinking that this partnership stuff's going to be easy. And I really don't think it is.
Now, in Boston, a digital credit union runs an innovation lab. I'm not going to ask you to comment on that in particular. Well, what do you think about that concept of a credit union sponsoring an innovation lab for fintechs, where essentially they're getting free rent in an office complex down by the waterfront in Boston and some consulting from credit union executives? It's a good deal for the startup. and is pretty competitive to be admitted into the program. No strings attached. Digital does not make them sign over any intellectual property rights, nothing whatsoever. So if you're accepted into it, you're nuts if you don't say yes. If you need office space, which you probably do. What do you think about that from the point of view of the institution? Do you see that as a good way for institutions to go ahead?
First of all, I think it works for digital for a number of reasons. One, they're large enough to pull it off. Number two, they've made a strategic commitment to it. I know some of the folks there, and they did not fit my Bob and Sally story. They come with experience, and I mean, most importantly, they go back to they're committed to doing this. It also works because they happen to be in the Boston area, where there is a decent number of fintech startups, whether either in Boston or, close enough in the New England Northeast area. So reality is that this is an okay strategy, and certainly works for digital, but because of a number of factors that are probably unique as they add up to digital. For the other 6,000 or so credit unions, it's probably no more than a handful that those factors apply and they could pull it off. So, it works for them because they've got the right pieces in place to make it work. I can't think of a whole lot more than maybe three or four other credit unions that it would work for.
Digital has this torrent of kids out of MIT. It's like never ending. They're smart, talented kids. And what other credit union can expect to have that steady army of super smart kids who want to do fintech startups? Not too many. I'm basically on the same side as you, and I also think that digital has very good staff that would know how to run this thing. What are we going to be talking about next year when we talk about this stuff?
I think we might start to see more emergence of blockchain and AI stuff. Blockchain may still be a little bit off the current radar. But one of the other surprising things, Bob, coming out of the survey was for all the talk about artificial intelligence, the percentage of credit unions that either have something implemented or are even planning to do something this year is still incredibly small. I mean, the discrepancy between the noise and reality on this is still huge. And I think as we look at a year from now, 2020, I think is when we'll start to see that going into 2019, a lot of these executives underestimated the involvement of artificial intelligence. I think part of the challenge is that they tend to look at these things as standalone things. We're going to implement an AI system. Well, what is an AI system? Maybe something like chatbots, and I'm still not all that bullish on chatbots. But I think they're going to start to realize that it's not a separate piece, that AI is embedded into various marketing systems. AI certainly embedded into fraud and risk management type applications, more risk management embedded into call center type applications. So, I think that AI will start to become more of a presence in the mindsets of the credit union executives when we're talking about this next year. And if not next year, then I'm going to put my stake in the ground and say definitely by 2021.
Before we go, the CU 2.0 podcast is looking for a few good sponsors to help us spread the word about the digital transformation of credit unions. You could be one of them. Contact Robert McGarvey for details at rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. First come, first served. Again, that's rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. Now for a good word from our sponsor. You wish you could profitably make low-cost payday loans to help out members in need. Stop wishing, start acting. Check out QCash, an automated payday loan provider created by credit union people for credit union members. It's out of Washington State Employees Credit Union. Good stuff, check it out. QCash, www.q-cash.com. Your members just may thank you. What are credit unions for? Helping good people out of jams. QCash just may be your solution. That's www.q-cash.com.
the CU 2.0 podcast.